Chapter 139. A hunting ramble with Zeke. At the foot of the mountain, a steep path went up among rocks and cliffs mantled with verdure. Here and there were green gulfs, down which it made one giddy to peep. At last we gained an overhanging, wooded shelf of land which crowned the heights, and along this, the path, well shaded, ran like a gallery. In every direction the scenery was enchanting. There was a low, rustling breeze, and below, in the vale, the leaves were quivering. The sea lay, blue and serene, in the distance, and inland the surface swelled up, ridge after ridge, and peak upon peak, all bathed in the Indian haze of the tropics, and dreamy to look upon. Still valleys, leagues away, reposed in the deep shadows of the mountains, and here and there, waterfalls lifted up their voices in the solitude. High above all, and central, the Arling spike lifted its finger. Upon the hillsides, small groups of bullocks were seen, some quietly browsing, others slowly winding into the valleys. We went on, directing our course for a slope of these hills, a mile or two further, where the nearest bullocks were seen. We were cautious in keeping to the windward of them, their sense of smell and hearing being, like those of all wild creatures, exceedingly acute. As there was no knowing that we might not surprise some other kind of game in the coverts through which we were passing, we crept along warily. The wild hogs of the island are uncommonly fierce, and as they often attack the natives, I could not help following Tonoi's example of once in a while peeping in under the foliage. Frequent retrospective glances also served to assure me that our retreat was not cut off. As we rounded a clump of bushes, a noise behind them, like the crackling of dry branches, broke the stillness. In an instant, Tonoi's hand was on a bough, ready for a spring, and Zeke's finger touched the trigger of his piece. Again the stillness was broken, and thinking it high time to get ready, I brought my musket to my shoulder. "Look sharp!" cried the Yankee, and dropping on one knee, he brushed the twigs aside. Presently, off went his piece, and with a wild snort, a black, bristling boar, his cherry red lip curled up by two glittering tusks, dashed, unharmed, across the path, and crashed through the opposite thicket. I saluted him with a charge as he disappeared, but not the slightest notice was taken of the civility. By this time, Tonoi, the illustrious descendant of the bishops of Imeo, was 20 feet from the ground. "Aramai! Come down, you old fool!" cried the Yankee. "The pesky critter's on t'other side of the island afore this." "I rather guess," he continued, as we began reloading, "that we've spoiled sport by firing at that ear tarnal hog. The bullocks heard the racket, and are flinging their tails about now on the keen jump. Quick, Paul, and let's climb that rock yonder, and see if so be there's any in sight." But none were to be seen, except at such a distance, that they looked like ants. As evening was now at hand, my companion proposed our returning home forthwith, and then, after a sound night's rest, starting in the morning upon a good day's hunt with the whole force of the plantation. Following another pass in descending into the valley, we passed through some nobly wooded land on the face of the mountain. One variety of tree particularly attracted my attention. The dark mossy stem, over 70 feet high, was perfectly branchless for many feet above the ground, when it shot out in broad boughs laden with lustrous leaves of the deepest green. And all round the lower part of the trunk, thin, slab-like buttresses of bark, perfectly smooth, and radiating from a common center, projected along the ground for at least 2 yards. From below, these natural props tapered upward until gradually blended with the trunk itself. There were signs of the wild cattle having sheltered themselves behind them. Zeke called this the canoe tree, as in old times it supplied the navies of the kings of Tahiti. For canoe building, the woods is still used. Being extremely dense and impervious to worms, it is very durable. Emerging from the forest, when halfway down the hillside, we came upon an open space, covered with ferns and grass, over which a few lonely trees were casting long shadows in the setting sun. Here, a piece of ground some 100 feet square, covered with weeds and brambles, and sounding hollow to the tread, was enclosed by a ruinous wall of stones. Tono, I said, it was an almost forgotten burial place, of great antiquity, where no one had been interred since the islanders had been Christians. Sealed up in dry, deep vaults, many a dead heathen was lying here. Curious to prove the old man's statement, I was anxious to get a peep at the catacombs. But hermetically overgrown with vegetation as they were, no aperture was visible. Before gaining the level of the valley, we passed by the site of a village, near a watercourse, long since deserted. There was nothing but stone walls, and rude dismantled foundations of houses, constructed of the same material. Large trees and brushwood were growing rankly among them. I asked Tonoi how long it was since anyone had lived here. Emmy, Tamari boy, plenty Kanaker men, martyr, he replied. And now, only poor Pekanaka fishermen, left me born here. Going down the valley, vegetation of every kind presented a different aspect from that of the high land. Chief among the trees of the plain on this island is the tea, large and lofty, with a massive trunk and broad, laurel-shaped leaves. The wood is splendid. In Tahiti, I was shown a narrow, polished plank fit to make a cabinet for a king. Taken from the heart of the tree, it was of a deep, rich scarlet, traced with yellow veins, and in some places clouded with hazel. In the same grove with the regal H you may see the beautiful flowering Otu, its pyramid of shining leaves diversified with numberless small, white blossoms. Planted with trees as the valley is almost throughout its entire length, I was astonished to observe so very few which were useful to the natives. Not one in 100 was a coconut or breadfruit tree. But here Tonoi again enlightened me. In the sanguinary religious hostilities which ensued upon the conversion of Christianity of the first Pomeri, a war party from Tahiti destroyed, by hurtling the bark, entire groves of these inviolable trees. For some time afterwards they stood stark and leafless in the sun, sad monuments of the fate which befell the inhabitants of the valley. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.